Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we are all about packing as much into your expat life as you can, filling it up and getting the most out of the experience. Our expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries. I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie expat based in Qatar, and I'm here with Nikki Moffat, who's also an expat. She's over in Hamburg, Germany. Together, we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of packing boxes, new front door keys, and hidden light switches. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
Hello, Kirsty Rice. I'm good, except I'm missing a lot of my hair.
Oh! I did see you are missing a lot of hair. I saw it on your Instagram, which as we speak, Nikki Moffat, have you seen that Instagram was down this morning?
I have seen the absolute panic on all other forms of social media.
Anyway, back to the podcast. We're going to follow our usual format today and break it up into five topics, which are, of course,
we'll cover geographically challenged, which is where we as expats can face situations, feelings, thoughts, and memories that are pretty much impacted by having lived and loved in more than one place for any period of time. And it might happen hardly ever, or it might happen every day, and you never know quite when to expect the feeling or how it will appear. We'll also cover expat relationships, which can be relationships within your family, with your partner, external to your family, friends, colleagues, locals, and even institutions like schools.
We'll also look at expat tech, where we look at the latest tech available to expats, and expat money, where we discuss money issues that are particularly relevant to expats. We've got a great one today on that.
And we'll also go to location, 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 which is where we speak every episode to an expat living somewhere in the world, and we ask them the Fat Five Plus questions.
Okay, so let's get started with geographically challenged. Nikki, have you been to a baby shower?
I have. I went to a baby shower yesterday and it made me think, so this is this lady's third baby and she has two boys who are older and now she's having a baby girl, so it's very exciting for her. But it just made me think about what do you do when it's not in your home country and sort of big significant events. What do you do? How do you celebrate things? And if you're in a different country, dealing with different people and different things, how do celebrations happen? Because you had four babies in four different countries. Did you have a baby shower at all, ever?
Yeah. So first baby, we were in Indonesia and I can't remember. I don't think there was a baby shower in Indonesia. I think there was kind of maybe a bit of a get together. Actually, no. Do you know what? I think I went out for drinks with friends in place of the baby shower, like just before the baby was born. I know exactly what you mean though, Nikki. You know, there's these, you have these ideas of the tradition that you would do in your home country and that you would have your parents and your, you know, maybe your siblings or whatever. My biggest baby shower was actually my fourth child and we were in Canada and a really gorgeous girlfriend who had a really gorgeous house put on a really gorgeous baby shower. So she did like that. She went the full hog and American friend. And, you know, that was the first time I had seen the whole decorations and, you know, pretty little things all over the tables and, you know, that whole full thing. I think when I had my first baby at 31, my girlfriends and I really was, you went to someone's house, you maybe had some champagne or a cup of tea and everyone gave a present. And maybe there was a kind of sort of kitschy baby game, but that it really was just a get together. Whereas I think these things have just progressed on to bigger than big, haven't they? So what did your friend do and was it hosted? Did she do it for herself or did someone else do it for her?
No, look, it was very small. It was just a small group of ladies having a morning tea basically and we just all took along a gift and talked about stories not necessarily to do with babies. I think if it was her first baby, it might be different. I have another friend here who's having a baby. It's her first baby. She has no sort of friends or family here.
What nationality is she?
She's American. and she's married to a German guy, and he has, it's his second marriage. He has some sort of grown-up children. It's going to be her sort of only baby, she says. And so she's really struggled with it because she knows what would be happening if she was in the States and how that would be unrolling, what her sister would be doing and her friends. And I think, you know, it's not a selfish thing. It's just a cultural overload. Like, this is her first baby, her only baby. She's so excited about it, but she can't do the things that she thought when you're growing up and get married and have a baby, this is what you do.
Yeah.
I really feel so, so it just really encompasses how you celebrate milestones that you know that you would celebrate in one country in another in a different way.
And people have such different celebrations. I remember being in Libya and a Dutch friend really wanted to make these particular little, what I would see as tiny little pikelets, but, you know, and you had them in blue or pink, and, you know, me being clueless and not really understanding why that was happening, do you know, but that was something that was very much part of, you have to do this if you're having a baby, you would have blue ones or you would have pink ones. And please, if there's someone who is Dutch and listening to this, put us out of our misery and tell us what they're called. But I agree with you. I'm actually hosting a baby shower on Friday, Nikki. I know. So I think I've talked about it here on the podcast before, but Helen, our housekeeper, who started working for us when she was 19 and is now 26, 27, or just turned 27, she is about to have her first baby at the end of the month. And I asked if it would be appropriate or if she felt at all comfortable for me to host a baby shower for her and her friends. And I learned something because she kept talking about her husband and his friends, and I said, oh, will they come as well? And she said, yes, in Ethiopia, the men come to the baby shower as well, but they come just for the food. I was like, oh, okay. So I have my two daughters here at the moment, and it is just the best timing, because this afternoon we're going to go out. We know that she's having a boy. So we're going to go out and do the whole, you know, we're going to do all those it's a boy decorations that you sprinkle all over the table, and, you know, the balloons and the gifts and the, anything sort of baby related. So,
and do you have a Pinterest page put together for this baby shower?
I don't. And I could see for Helen, our housekeeper, that would have been so not in her her spec. She was saying that she actually didn't care so much about the baby shower. It was more she felt the pressure of friends who were wanting her to have one, which is funny because I remember the same thing. I remember a lot of friends saying to me, you know, you've got to have one, and not sort of understanding why. And I think, you know, back to your question about the four different countries, I did do a different form of kind of baby shower in each different location with completely different friends and completely different nationalities. And I think one of the things that can be a gift as an expat is you do learn about the Dutch pikelets. And, you know, not that you can remember, you know, 13 years later what they're called, but you do remember the sentiment, and you do remember that your very beautiful friend Petra went to all this effort to make these particular pikelets for you, you know, because you were having a baby. And so I think that's lovely, but I think the sad thing is that you quite often have these events without your parents or without, you know, people that are incredibly special to you that you know you would absolutely love to be there.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. So my friend here who is married to a German, doesn't have any sort of family or friends here. She did some online things. So they had a Facebook group, which was sort of like a baby shower, and they paid some sort of online games to do with the, I guess, guessing the weight and the date and things like that, which is the kind of thing that they might do. Okay, here we go, Kirsty. I've just been Googling. Beshoot met, no, I can't pronounce it. I have enough trouble with German, but it says here, the Dutch serve this particular thing, which is basically a thick cracker or rusk topped with butter and then anise seeds that have been dipped in blue or pink sugary coating.
That's right. That's right. Yes. Okay. So I realized I've got two different things on the go in my brain. They were these specific little things with the anise seeds, like they were yummy. And then the little pancakes, someone can tell me that. I think that's a different occasion. But yes.
I think they're called poffertjies. Oh, no, okay, I'm not even saying that either. Dutch people, please phone it in.
Yes.
And I'll tell you how you can phone that in. You can phone that in by leaving us a message on our website, truefatexpats.com. You press the microphone button and it's just like leaving a voicemail. But in this case, you can give us some Dutch lessons.
Okay, on to expat relationships. Nikki, I wanted to talk about your expat relationship with your partner and not specifically your partner, but everybody's partner. And I wanted to talk about illness. So we had a post from Jennifer who, and this was a few weeks ago, she wrote, "It's with heavy heart that after 14 years as an expat, we're going home for good. My husband's been diagnosed with motor neurons disease and has decided that he wants to be in the US for treatment." She said that she was having a really hard time with it on all fronts because it was not only the potential loss of her husband but also the loss of their lifestyle and the loss of all that they had known since the day that they'd got married. She said that her three kids seemed to be coping with it really well. They'd only just moved to London sort of 6 months ago and they'd found schools and they'd done all of this stuff and now they were having to pack it all up and move back, and she was going to obviously become a caregiver for her husband. There were lots and lots of comments, and you know, a lot of people got in contact with Jennifer privately as well. For me, I don't think my girlfriend Bonnie would mind me saying that we've had a situation like this very close to home, where exactly the same thing has happened to a girlfriend of mine. Her husband started to notice these symptoms, worrying sort of symptoms, and it's taken them a lot of heartbreak and grief and going to two different countries to get a proper diagnosis. But he has also been diagnosed with MND, or what I would call MND, motor neurons disease, but I know others in North America refer to it as ALS. And Nikki, it's just got me thinking, you know, about this expat life of ours and how we float through it and how often many of us start it when we feel that we're 10 foot tall and bulletproof and we're having babies.
Yes.
And yeah, you know, because the majority of us as expats, you know, I often refer to us as worker bees. You know, we've gone to different countries with specific jobs, you know, that we've been given these jobs because we have specific talents and we are there to be worker bees. And we don't think about, yep, sure, we might break our arms and legs while playing sport, or we might pick up a bug, or we might, you know, get bitten by the wrong mosquito in a certain country, but we usually think that we're going to get better and continue on. And I guess I hadn't really thought about what happens if, you know, particularly with my husband, or I don't know if my husband's thought about it with me too, what happens if you have one of these particularly nasty diseases? How do you navigate it?
Yeah, it's very difficult because it's all the things that that have been covered in the podcast before. You have to have these things in place. You have to have wills. You have to have power of attorney. You have to have all these things that, in case something like this happens, that everything's in place. So you don't have to put those things in place at the time as well. But then, as you and I have also discussed in preparing for the podcast when we had our quick chat, there's another facet of these things, particularly when you're in a country as an expat and your visa depends, your job depends on your visa, depends on your job.
Yep.
And how do you go about getting diagnosed? Do
Yes.
you use the health insurance that your company provides for you and therefore can see what's happening? Or do you have to do that in a a bit of a more furtive way where you try and work it all out first and then work out how you're going to deal with that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we have to be mindful that expats come in many different forms. So there will be a group of expats who are currently listening to our conversation, Nikki, who say, oh, but I work for XYZ, who is a big conglomerate, and they sent me on my expat location. So they will look after me and they will get me the best healthcare and they will get me home, and, you know, there'll be some sort of compensation. So that's one group of people. But that doesn't, that isn't the case for the majority of expats. So if you have got your gig yourself and you've taken yourself to a location to work for a particular company, and you know that if you're not physically capable of doing your job, you will soon be sent home, there's a great concern. You know, you're like, well, I don't want to go to the that healthcare provider because I really don't want them to know until I really know what I'm dealing with. So I would urge people to sort of think about that. Think about the healthcare that they have. And yes, maybe your company might be providing healthcare within your country, or maybe, you know, that country has public healthcare, but just start sort of thinking about, what if I need to keep some of those details private? What about if you want to go home for that diagnosis and confirmation of diagnosis? What does your healthcare look like in your home country?
And can you get healthcare?
Yes,
where you're going.
Exactly. So I know personally for me, when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I chose to have my chemo here in Qatar because I had healthcare provided here in Qatar and the system was fantastic. But timing wise, I knew I was going to have my radiation in Australia because I had a daughter who was about to start school. My radiation was due sort of around Christmas time. I didn't want to impact my kids' lives by keeping everybody in Qatar over that 6-week period that I had to have radiation every day. So I chose to have it in Australia. Now, we had trauma and protection insurance that was paid to us when I was diagnosed. So I used a portion of that for my radiation and I paid cash. So that's how that worked. I think that, you know, you should look at, because I'm aware that I'm talking to a broad range of people here. Like if you are Canadian, you would be part of the public health system and you would be in a line. So you have to decide whether you're happy to join that line and whether you would just make a decision that you were going to go straight home and just sit at home and do everything there. Or, you know, maybe if you're a dual career person, you know, you might think you're going to wait it out through your time, through your contract, I guess, because, you know, you've got to decide if you both want to go home. It gets really tricky. And what also gets tricky is if you have children, and whether they are teens or adults or small, what's that situation look like for your teens? You know, my girlfriend at the moment, both of her children are taking some time off from their university studies to come back and spend time with her and her husband here. So I think, you know, it sounds so drastic to make such drastic decisions when everybody's feeling healthy and fit and everything's great. But I think it's really important as expats that we, you know, we factor in, what if there's a disaster? What would we do? Where would we go?
Yeah, and that's really tied into, you know, making sure that the expat money side of things, so making sure you have an account that has a certain amount of money in case this kind of situation comes up.
Yes.
Because this is a, you know, maybe that's your get out of town account and you just use that for your diagnosis or something like that. So, but yes, it's just part of having all these particular pieces of paperwork and documents and processes in place that you hope you never have to use, like you hope you never have to use insurance a lot. So you know, and you and your partner have discussed, if this happens, this is what I want to happen, or this is what we should do.
Yes, absolutely. So you want to have that, you know, we call it at our house the parachute account of, I've got to get out of here fast. So I've got to pull the cord and get out. So yeah, you need to have that account. Exactly, Nikki. That's a really good reminder. So yes, thoughts go out to everyone, especially Jennifer and my friend Bon. Beautiful Bonnie. And you don't know what's around the corner, and you could have set up plans for 10 years' time and, you know, even 5 years' time of what's going to look like. But just remember that you never know what might happen next week. Moving on, Nikki, and there really is no appropriate way to move on from such a heavy conversation, and there's no segue, but reviews. Now, Nikki, you had a review from over the summer that you didn't want us to miss. What was it?
Yes, I think we should take note of the review, Kirsty, because I loved it. I loved it so much I shared it on my personal Facebook page because I love Kiwi Health. I don't know her. I've never paid her any money, but this is what she wrote about the podcast. She said, "A very, very funny podcast that reassures you that the doubts and tough times you experience living abroad are completely normal. The Two Fat Expats is female empowerment at its best. It reminds you that there are many women rooting for your success, and they're there to laugh with you when it doesn't go exactly as planned. I discovered the podcast 6 months ago and have been hooked ever since. For anyone currently living abroad, dreaming of living abroad, or has been an expat in a previous life, I cannot recommend this podcast enough."
Oh my gosh, I want to share that on my personal Facebook page as well. That's brilliant. Kiwi Health, thank you. I love you. I'd like to meet you. Tell us where you are and we'll come and find you. That's right. Now, if you'd also like to leave us a review, the easiest way to do that is to head over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts. And if you've ever listened to a podcast in your life, you'll know that it actually really helps people to find our podcast and to listen to it. When you review it, it just bumps it up and makes it far more visible. Okay, technically expat.
Kirsty, what is going on?
Okay, so I didn't think I'd be talking about our Apple TV once again. I'm sorry, but that noise in the background, does it sound louder and louder to you, Nikki? And I'm sorry if it's annoying listeners who have got headphones on and can hear everything. I've got no idea why it's so loud, but it sounds like maybe there is some sort of major drama on the roadwork outside our house. But anyway, I hope you can continue on and it's not annoying you too much. Apple TV drama. So I think the last couple of weeks I've covered how brilliant it was, how we got it, how Uncle Andrew got it connected for us, how it then went down when my husband was away and I had to become best friends with Ronaldo from Getflix. I think then I also struck up a chat with Raphael, who helped me out as well, and I became the expert of Getflix and Apple TV, and everything was great and dandy. And then lo and behold, on the weekend again, right before the AFL Grand Final, thankfully we were going off to go and watch it somewhere else, so it wasn't as tragic as it could have been, but suddenly it kind of was buffering again and wasn't working again with one of the apps. It was two specific apps. It was the AFL app and the Template app. Anyway, was talking to the people at Getflix, and then my husband decided, no, it's got to be the provider. So he rang our local provider to say, you know, our internet speed, you know, what's going on? And he checked it. We're meant to get 100, what is it, megabytes per second?
Giga. I think it's
Is it giga? It's MPS, yes. Isn't it? So it's
MPS. Oh, sorry. Yeah. No, you're right.
So yeah. It's 100 MPS, you know, whatever. We were getting 60. My husband, being my husband and being an economist, he was like, I pay for 100, you know, and I'm only getting 60. You need to come out and investigate. I was at the time thinking, this has got nothing to do with our Apple TV, but you go right ahead. And also, as someone who works from home, thinking, it's never 100. Do you know, it's usually about 80, but, you know, okay. Anyway, long story short of what I'm trying to get to is the service provider came. They decided it was probably a problem with the router. They replaced the router with one of their routers. We had a Linksys router. They replaced it with one of their routers. And we had 90 MPS, which meant it was very, very fast, very, very good. But suddenly the Apple TV didn't work. And yes, and I was thinking, oh, Lordy, this is not good. Anyway, the man put the old router in a bag and said, see you later. And I thought, you know, I'll fix it with my friends Ronaldo and Raphael from Getflix. We'll be able to get this sorted. In the meantime, I just, you know, when you've got that niggling feeling in the back of your mind, you know, there's something that's just not right about this. And my husband set up a little bit of a chat with my brother-in-law and him, and my brother-in-law said, you know, check this, check that, do this, do that. Oh, and, you know, it could be one thing, but this is really rare and highly unlikely, but some routers actually block a DNS so that you can't use them. And I've immediately gone, bing, 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 you know, because it was provided by our government service provider.
Yes.
So we quickly rang the man who came back, gave us the old router. We're back to the shitty speed, but we do have Apple TV. So my message for all of you out there, if you have an old router and you decide, and if you've got Apple TV and you decide you're going to replace your router, just make sure that your router latch isn't blocked. It, evidently, it doesn't happen very often, but it does happen in some locations. So that might be something to be aware of. Okay, so that's my little bit of expat tech for the week.
And so everything's fine.
Everything again. Is fine again.
Perfect. So if you have a tech issue, don't forget to come and tell us about it in the Facebook group. If you haven't joined the Facebook group, you can come and join us. It's called Two Fat Expats, and we have over 10,000 members, and you can discuss and learn anything from our amazing members, including now how to fix Apple TV with a router that doesn't support DNS.
Okay, Nikki, I've got something special for expat money this week.
Oh, special.
So there was a little bit of conversation on a few expat pages that I've seen about the situation in the Netherlands and how the government is talking about changing the way that they tax people. Now, I have a lovely friend, Andrew, who's an auditor in the Netherlands. He's a South African. And so I thought, well, surely we must have other people here that want to know a bit more about it, or people who are perhaps considering moving to the Netherlands who will want to know if their tax situation is going to change, because obviously all of us negotiate contracts and look at the cost of housing and the cost of schooling and all of those things. So I gave my friend Andrew a call and said to him, hey, Andrew, I know nothing about the tax situation in the Netherlands, but I'm sure you do. And do you think you could explain it to me? So, Nikki, here's my lovely friend Andrew.
So expats at the moment, or under the current regime, there is what's called the 30% tax ruling, which essentially means that of your gross salary, they take out the first 30% and they do not tax that. And then you get taxed on the remaining 70% at the normal tax rate applicable to your tax bracket.
Right.
So it's quite a benefit because, you know, you're sort of being taxed on a smaller amount.
Yes.
And you're saving quite a substantial amount in tax. The current regime as it was standing was that it was an eight-year period in which it would apply. From the time that you arrive in the Netherlands, you could apply based on a specific skill set. You could apply for this 30% tax ruling. And generally, it was given. I think in some way, shape, or form, just to give you a bit more context, I think it was also maybe misused a little bit in terms of, you know, university graduates or quite young people applying for it and receiving. And I think that there was also a bit of tension within, you know, a lot of Dutch people who may not have understood how it worked and just saw it as, oh my gosh, these guys, you know, only get taxed at 30% instead of the 50-odd percent, which is not quite right. There are some restrictions. You can't live or work in or live within 150 kilometres of the Dutch border, which makes sense. So they had some sort of restrictions around it. And one of the other parts of the tax ruling was also around the school fees, international school fees being a non-taxable benefit as well under the regime as well, which is, if you look, as you know, when you look at international school fees, they, if you're paying them yourself, that's quite a substantial amount of money.
Yes.
But even if the company is paying for them, then you'll have to have a conversation with your company about who covers the tax bill. So I think last year, in October, the new coalition government sort of started to present their plans for the future. There was a talk about a cut to the 30% tax ruling and shortening it from 8 years to 5 years. That was recently then put into, well, proposed to the king as part of the Prinsjesdag activities that they do here this month. It was September 18th, I think. So it looks like it's going forward. The issue, I think, for most expats that are here is not really an issue with the fact that they're shortening from 8 to 5 years or individuals coming into the benefit, and you can make a call on whether or not you want to come or how you want to sort of plan out your finances. I think the bugbear for most expats is the shortening of it from 8 to 5 years for those people who were on the 8-year program. So you can imagine people as of January the 1st, 2019, who would break for another 3 years if they just arrived, or 2 years, or however long it was, have no such thing. So they're suddenly coming off this tax break. And, in terms of just preparation and financial stability and security and all those kind of things, the sort of decisions that you make when you have a time horizon of 8 years and you plan to invest in the country or buy a house, et cetera, or get a mortgage, you factor those sort of things in. So looking at it, on average, and the latest information that we have is that the school fees will remain a non-taxable benefit for the period of 8 years. So that will be in transition. But as I said, it will go for 8 to 5 years for expats currently based here. So we are sort of working on understanding what the simulation, the crux of the 3 years that are no longer under the regime. So, you can understand there's a bit of frustration. There's there's 40,000 people, over 40,000 people who have signed the petition. We're a minority as expats. For us, it's a case of, a deal is a deal, especially since our Prime Minister here, Mark Rutte, likes to shout that over at Theresa May whenever she talks about Brexit, as a sort of, a deal is a deal. So we're trying to use that line back on them in terms of just trying to get some sense out of them from the policy perspective.
Andrew, what do you think is the general feeling amongst expats? Like, have you spoken to people who've said, well, if this changes, we're out of here? Or do you just, or
oh, absolutely.
I guess, absolutely?
Absolutely. I mean, we've already seen a couple of expats that have already left. And I think they're just, they're generally ones that are towards the end of that 8-year period, so they would have only had, possibly another year or so. But they're saying, well, we'll move back to the UK or wherever they come from. I think there's a little bit of resentment. I think it's difficult. You've got to sort of balance. 20 to 30,000 K a year is quite a lot of money. You can throw a couple of arguments around. Those expats that come here that are highly skilled have not, taken advantage of the social security environment in the Netherlands in terms of schooling or in terms of university, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, we all use the roads here and, we need to pay our taxes, help the police and all the rest of it. But also, the highly skilled here are generally on private healthcare as well, and are through their companies or privately paying the school fees. So then, we're not that kind of a burden on the state in terms of using up resources in that way. And here we're sort of being turned around and saying, well, you had this for 8 years, but we've decided really that it's only going to be for five. So, people make long-term decisions as well. We bought a house. We love living in the Netherlands. We'll certainly be looking to stay here for as long as it's financially and socially worth our while, but it is. It makes you start to think. So my period, which would have ended in 2023, mid-year, will now end mid 2020. So again, I have a between now and then to think about whether or not I'm happy to accept the increase in my taxable revenue. And again, it's a personal choice for everybody.
Yeah, just another one of those expat curveballs.
Now, to be fair, I spoke to Andrew for a long, long time, and we obviously have to condense these interviews down. But I just want to tell people there's a couple of places you can go to help out or to get more information. So the first one is I Am Expat has a page where they explain all of it to you, and we'll put a link to that on our website. And there's a petition you can sign to the Dutch government, and I think it has something like over 40,000 signatures on it now. And there's also a GoFundMe page, and that is I know it sounds crazy.
It's an interesting concept for it a GoFundMe page, isn't it? I suppose, but if you have got a collective group of people that want legal representation,
that's right. And I felt the same thing. I thought, God, I never thought there'd be a GoFundMe page for the, you know, starving expat inverted commas. But no, this is all about they're trying to put together enough money for a lawyer to represent them. And so if you're interested, please go to our website, twofatexpats.com. But Nikki, tell me, what is the tax situation for you in Germany?
So we don't have anything quite like that. That sounds very fancy. And now I understand why there's so many expats in the Netherlands. We do. There's just really probably one thing that impacts us here is that you are taxed on the tax rate is based on your worldwide income. So you have your income here, but if you have income from other countries, you have to include it. And then they tell you your tax rate at tax time. So it's not that you pay necessarily more or less tax, and the tax brackets are quite large. So, you know, if you rent a house in another country, it's not going to rent that out. It's not going to tip you over to the next tax bracket. But that's one of the implications. And the other implication is that you pay, as in the Netherlands, you pay quite a lot of tax into the public system. You pay it into what's the equivalent of your superannuation, public healthcare, et cetera. If you leave before 5 years, then you can take your what's your equivalent of your superannuation with you in a lump sum payout. If you leave after 5 years, that still gets paid to you, but when you reach the age of 65. So there's a lot of people you find that come to Germany for just under 5 years because they can leave. And we didn't know that when we came, but we had planned to come for 5 years. So we'll have to see how that goes.
Yes. So I remember we had something like this in Canada too. I think we paid into the super or, you know, retirement plan, and then we just kissed it goodbye when we left. And, yes, you know, with both of us working full time for, you know, the 5 years we were there, it was, you know, a substantial amount, but you just kind of read it into, well, that's my contribution, you know, to the society. Yeah.
That's right. And it's just part of life. As Andrew said, you know, you use roads and bridges and hospitals, and you use public systems. So, you know, sometimes you pay tax.
I understand, you know, it's one of those ones where from afar you could see if you were Dutch, you'd be thinking, well, stuff you. You should just pay what we pay, and yes, how dare you jump up and down about it. But as I can also see as an expat that if you work for a company where you've worked for them in several different locations and then they ask you to go and work in Amsterdam because they need you to fill a role, that when you're contemplating the fact that you're going to buy a house and that you're going to pay international school fees and all of these things, that you probably would like there to be some sort of tax break for you so that you're not incurring a lot of expense. So I know that us as Australians, I would choose an international school above a local school because I would be thinking, well, we're going to move on to another international school or we're going to move back to an English-speaking country. So I think you've got to factor in that as well, because as much as many of us would love to go and live in Amsterdam, and we'd probably do it just for a cuddle or you know.
A cuddle.
You know, I'd swear there would be many people that would happily leave where they were to go and live in lovely green Amsterdam. But I think we do have to think about the people that have been asked to go there and are filling a certain role and have a certain expertise.
Yeah, but it's about what the expectation is. So I totally get it. If I was Dutch, I'd be like, yeah, dude, you're in my country, pay my tax, same as I pay. But the expectation has been that they have been offered this, and so it's being taken away, and that's where the issue is. And also, I wonder how companies, international companies, are addressing it, because they just would have to offer, I guess, higher salaries then in future.
I guess they'd have to offer higher salaries, or they would offer to incur that expense for the, you know, for the time that you were there, I imagine. So, but I guess, you know, it once again, it comes down to, we're talking about a wide range of people here, and it everybody has an individual circumstance as well. Okay, absolutely. So if you're in the Netherlands, I'd love to know how the situation has affected you. Or also, what I really want to know is if you're in another country with tax rules that are different from expats v locals, would love to sort of hear about that. So you can, of course, leave us a message by heading to our website at twofatexpats.com. You press on the microphone. It's just as easy as leaving a voicemail.
Which, Kirsty, is what one of our favourite listeners, Miss Shorty, did recently. Yes, let's hear it now.
Hello, Nikki Moffat. Hello, Kirsty Rice. It's Miss Shardy here, coming to you from the middle of nowhere in the Northern Territory, Australia. Now, I'm not an expat, but boy, your podcast is my favourite podcast of all time, and I listen to a lot. I just so look forward to every Monday when the new podcast drops into my little app. And I know you guys always go on about how, we've been speaking for too long, we need to finish it. But I'm so sad when you guys stop talking. I go about my station duties with you in my ears. I clean the kitchen, I clean the toilets, I put washing on the line, I cook for all our staff. And you just make my day so much happier. I love hearing you laugh, and you just don't take yourself seriously, and you are just so genuine and authentic. And the thing I love about your podcast is it's just like having a chat with two girlfriends. I just love everything about your podcast. You guys just make me so happy. And Nikki, I can't believe you've done 50 episodes. It's really gone fast. And congratulations, Kirsty, on 100.
She's very funny. I do love Miss Shardy, and I love thinking about her in the middle of bum truck nowhere, as she calls it, listening to Two Fat Expats while I'm sitting here with the mosque in the background or some sort of catastrophic accident out on the street, which seems to be happened today. And Nikki, you're in Hamburg with either snow or sleet or perhaps, you know, 1 hour of sunshine a day.
Location, location, location. Kirsty, we're up to J. What do you think J will be for?
Jakarta.
Jakarta. Now, I spoke to who I feel is like the famous Anne-Marie, because it's a longtime friend of Kirsty's. I felt a little bit like I was chatting to a rock star, because I feel like I've been hearing about Anne-Marie for such a long time. But then I found out you didn't even live in Jakarta at the same time.
No, we didn't.
I found out that she met you after you moved to Qatar and were, in fact, on a fact-finding visit for your upcoming book.
Oh, shit.
You know how I love to mention your upcoming book.
Oh, bugger. Yes, Anne-Marie's story, Anne-Marie's and my story, I think is a great story for the expat world, in that I lived in Jakarta in 2001. And it is a very special time for me because it first baby, first expat location, and just absolutely loved it. But I was very good friends with a woman called Sue. And Sue used to say to me all the time, God, you remind me of my friend Anne-Marie. you really remind me of my friend Anne-Marie. And I distinctly remember being told all the time, oh, gee, you need to meet Anne-Marie. You'd really like Anne-Marie. And you know when someone says that to you, you think, yeah, I'm probably not going to like her at all. And yes. What annoying fact does what or you know what annoying habit does Anne-Marie have that you've obviously think that I also have? Anyway, fast forward, I guess probably another 10 to 12 years, and let me think about this. I reckon it might have even been more. So let's say 13 years. So fast forward all that time and I head to Jakarta and I go to visit my friend Sue, because my friend Sue is one of the luckiest people in the world and she has gone to every fabulous expat location and she was back in Jakarta like 13 years later. She was there for the second time.
Wow.
And who was there with her but her friend Anne-Marie. And I got to meet Anne-Marie, and Sue was absolutely right. I really, really liked Anne-Marie. And I thought, yeah, I can totally see what you saw in us that was similar and why you would think I would get on with her. And then we just became friends, even though we hadn't even lived in the same place. Anne-Marie came and stayed with me in Adelaide for a night. When she was there on a conference, we kind of hooked up and she came for the night and we went out for lunch with the kids and had a great time. And yeah, I just continue to speak to Anne-Marie and know what Anne-Marie's up to. So I was very, very happy when you decided to talk to her about Jakarta. And she is the expert of Jakarta.
Oh, my goodness. What an expert. Yeah. So she has lived there a few different times from speaking to her. And the last time was 10 years. But in July this year, she moved to Australia with her daughters. One just finished the IB. And another one's going to a school, which is awesome. It's called Quacky. It's the Queensland Academy of Creative Industries. But I love the school name. I wrote it down specifically. And so I talked to Anne-Marie obviously for a long time, but I have edited it down to the Fab Five. So I opened with our standard question, which was, what is her level of in love with Jakarta?
My current level's about a 7, I think.
Okay. And do you think that's changed since you've moved to a part-time basis or?
I think it's probably gone down a little bit because I feel a bit disengaged being back. I let a lot of things go when I moved in July. So coming back, I feel a little bit of a fish out of water. But that's probably got to do more with my personal and social connections rather than the place itself.
So what's your best local find been in that whole time?
The people are just so nice to you wherever you go. I really think it's the friendliness and the accommodating way that the Indonesian people deal with you. I think that's my overall find. Whether it's the hairdresser, whether it's the cheap manicures, or all the things you can order to come to your house, like a blow dry and a massage and anything you want, false eyelashes, everybody will come to your house to do it and they'll be really happy to do it and they're very nice. Yeah, I think that's...
On the other end of the scale then, what drives you crazy?
sometimes the smiling way that they say, "Kosong, Mrs.," which means zero or there isn't any or I'm not going to find it for you. Or it's... The fact that you have to ask exactly the right question to get the information that you need. So I'll tell a little story that everybody that I've ever met has heard. My beautiful maid, who's been with me since I was in Balikpapan, so this is probably about 15 years she's worked for us, she was having trouble reading the back of a packet mix one day in Balikpapan, and I said to her, "Are you having trouble seeing that?" And she said, "Oh yeah, Mrs. My eyes are really bad." So off she went to the optometrist and she came back with the glasses, and then I saw her doing exactly the same thing. I said, "Don't the glasses, are they no good? Aren't they helping you?" She said, "Oh, I can't read." So that to me just sums up you need to be very, very specific in the questions that you're asking. Nobody ever tells you a lie, but they don't. You just have to know what you're looking for.
Well, so you've lived there obviously on and off a few times. What's one place that you'd love to live that might be somewhere else?
I'd love to get into Europe. I haven't. My husband's in mining, so it's never really come up for us. So pretty well anywhere in Europe, I would like to go.
Okay, I have to tell you, the weather's not that great here.
Well, sometimes when it's constantly 32 degrees and 98% humidity, you think, gee, I wouldn't mind a bit of snow. I wouldn't mind a bit of chill.
Fair enough. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life?
Somebody once told me in the first couple of weeks not to talk too much, which I think is probably good advice. I think when you come into a community where there are a lot of very long-term expats, people coming in with a certain level of missionary zeal get a little bit annoying. So I think it's good to sit back and just see what people are doing and see sort of how the land lies. And the other, specifically to Jakarta, the best advice is just to get involved, because it's a place that's got a lot to offer, but it's also very, very easy to get lost. And if you choose not to engage yourself, it could be a very lonely place.
What's the biggest lesson that you've learned?
I've had a lot of experiences both here and we're in South America, and I think there's a lot of different ways to live. I've seen people come to arrangements within their marriages, within their families, within their communities to live in ways that I probably would have been a little bit more critical of had I not been overseas for such a long time. I think that's probably the lesson, that what suits one family doesn't necessarily suit all families, and there's just a lot of ways differently to do it.
Yeah, that's really good. That's so true, but it's not something you necessarily always top of mind and think about, but that's a good lesson. What about, do you have a book or a movie or a podcast that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Well, I often follow your advice, and I've done Serial, and I'm sure you've all been listening. You've been listening to Teacher's Pet. Of course, I've listened to that. I really enjoyed, I wrote a memoir and My Mother Says It's Lies. Did you listen to that one?
Oh, yeah, Kirsty did. I didn't listen to it all, but yes.
I didn't listen to it all either, but what I did, I enjoyed. Yeah, I'm a bit of a BBC drama tragic. That's my, I can only commit to a 6-part drama.
Right.
And that's my,
did you watch Split?
I've watched Split. Last night I just finished Bodyguard.
Oh, I haven't seen Bodyguard. Is it good?
Really good, yeah. So here's my friend. Sit down, Poppy.
Okay, perfect. Perfect timing. I'm all done.
So tell me, what happened? She had someone arrive at the door and it was an abrupt end, or what went
well,
down?
Interesting. So I said, okay, that's great. Thank you so much. And then she said, well, actually, you'd be very interested in my friend Kalsoom and Kalsoom's story. And I said, okay. So then we spoke for another 10 minutes or so, where she told me, well, Kalsoom was there sort of feeding information. We're having a 3-way conversation. So Kalsoom is from Pakistan. She's culturally from the Hazara people, which are people that have been
displaced.
I think displaced. Yeah, they've been displaced and discriminated against, I think, within the country. And so she, Kalsoom, is a refugee in Jakarta waiting for a placement with UNHCR, which is the United Nations Refugee Organization. And she's been there for 5 years, but the current wait time for placement is 15 years. But the kicker is, well, there's so many kickers, but one of the things is that in Pakistan, Kalsoom worked with refugees as her job. That was her job, to help refugees in Pakistan. And now she is a refugee and herself, and she's a very active one. So Anne-Marie met her at a school that Kalsoom set up, teaching English to refugees. And she told me about some other amazing projects that Kalsoom is working on and that Anne-Marie has been involved with over time. So Anne-Marie's obviously knows everything about Jakarta, but also has been incredibly involved in these kind of projects while she's been working there, and told me about, as with everything, I wish the interview could go for 40 minutes, because she really is a very interesting lady with a lot of amazing stories. But I have to say one thing. While I was editing the interview, she sent me a Skype message. She said, on reflection, there's so much more to say. Maybe Jakarta's more of an 8 than a 7. She's the ugly sister of the Southeast Asian countries. And everybody loves an underdog, even if the traffic drives you to drink.
Oh, that's so clever. She is the Jakarta is the ugly sister of the Southeast Asian countries. And when you live in Jakarta, there's that whole, you know, I'm going to get out of here and I'm going to go to Singapore, you know, because which everyone, of course, says is really sterile and, you know, yes, not Asia at all. But, yes, it is. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing pretty about Jakarta, and it is a very grey sky, either with smog and pollution or thunderous clouds. But it is definitely beautiful, and my heart, and I won't go on about it again, but it is very much still in Jakarta, and I would go back there in a heartbeat, because my thing is there is always something to see. You never, ever tire of looking out the window. Anne-Marie is a speech therapist by trade, and so I have noticed with Anne-Marie over the last few years, she has become quite heavily involved in the refugee situation in Indonesia.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's one of those things. I was talking about this with my mother-in-law the other day, because my mother-in-law was also an expat with very small children in an Asian country, is that one of my biggest regrets and disappointments is that while I was in Jakarta, I had I was a new mother with a new baby, my very first. And so I was probably a little bit nervy about, you know, oh God, I've got to go and get her TB vaccination immediately. And, you know, I've got to make sure that she's safe and she's okay and that the water's sterile and, you know, all those things that you worry about as a new mum in the Western world.
Of course.
And then yeah. You get, you know, I remember we would have baby groups where someone would say, I called an ambulance because I thought my baby was choking and the ambulance never came. And luckily they had, you know, unchoked the baby and the baby was fine. And so everything was fine. But you always had those things in the what ifs in the back of your mind of, you know, I would never get to the hospital in this traffic. What would I do, you know, or where would I go? Or, you know, you were putting those sterilization tablets in the bath. You were, you know, Dettoling everything. You were, every time you went out and some really lovely, gorgeous woman on the street would stick her finger in your baby's mouth and you'd think, oh, I hope that's okay. And you had all these concerns. So I think held back from doing a lot of volunteer work because I was all about, you know, new mothering and being safe and clean and all the rest of it. If I went back now, I would love to do that sort of work. And I think that's that whole thing, isn't it, about what sort of expat you would be in what country.
Yeah, and a reason and a season. And yes, all those kinds of things.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And I know that that's been one thing. I have a girlfriend who was in KL and she did a lot of charity work in KL and then got to Qatar, and it was one of the things she really struggled with, because there aren't a lot of charity organisations here where you can hands-on help people. You can donate a lot of money towards helping people in other countries, but, you know, Qatari families tend to really look after their own, and you know, you don't see a lot of orphanages and things like that. So yeah, I think I guess, Nikki, we really need to do an episode on the charity work that people do in different countries, because I think it's really interesting, the opportunities that are out there.
And now we move on to one of our favorites, which is books, movies, podcasts, telly.
Okay. Nikki, movies. I want to talk to you about a movie I watched on the plane called Goodbye, Christopher Robin. Now, I don't want to get confused with another movie that is just simply called Christopher Robin that has Ewan McGregor in it, because I haven't seen that movie. I don't know anything about it apart from the fact that it has it has a bear that talks and it's meant to be beautiful and lovely. And I've heard other people say it's beautiful and lovely, but that's not the movie I'm talking about. The movie I'm talking about is called Goodbye, Christopher Robin, and it has Margot Robbie in it. It's really all about A.A. Milne, and it's set in the English countryside. It's kind of about how he was very much a London sort of socialite, married to the character that is played by Margot Robbie, and that then he went to war, and after that his life changed. And that's when he started. So he was very much a serious writer, but it was after the war that he decided he was going to write something more sort of fanciful, and he started writing these Winnie the Pooh stories. Yes. And he very much suffered
Hashtag based on a true story.
Yes, and very much suffered from post-traumatic stress, which was why he was in the country. Now, the reason I just loved this movie was it's one of those really pretty English movies. You know, English countryside, lovely, lovely. Everybody's accent is lovely, lovely. Do you know, you just feel all kind of like you're living in the Enchanted Woods. You know, it's really quite beautiful. But it's also brutally honest. So Margot Robbie plays the socialite wife who is basically, while everything looks lovely, lovely, is really pretty much a crapola of mother, and is very much invested in herself and life being fun and happy and all about, you know, just as long as she's sort of okay. But it shows you to the life of the boy who Christopher Robin was based on, because Winnie the Pooh became this huge hit, and then the press became very interested in the boy that it was based on, and they very much used this boy to promote the book, and he became, people wanted to know more and more about him, and he was quite rattled by it all. And so it's a really deep movie. In the end, what starts is kind of quite pretty and beautiful. You then look at the effect of this child who is used as a prop and as a muse for work, and then you see how it affects the relationship. And it's a bit of a stretch to then start talking about mummy blogging and writing, but I could see a lot of that there. Do you know what I mean? Someone who's making their living out of telling stories about their child and using their child's imagination for their own creativity. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that this child grows up and goes to war, to then talk about, and, you know, I'm not giving anything away by saying that you then sort of think about, it really had me thinking about what sort of parent I was, what your child would say about you, and how you can both see two situations very differently from a child's perspective growing up to an adult looking at their parenting. I just thought it was an absolutely brilliant movie. Goodbye, Christopher Robin.
Goodness, sounds very deep.
No, I don't know if maybe I just make these things deeper than they are. And maybe the two glasses of wine on the airplane don't help. But I particularly enjoyed it. Now, I have heard a lot of people talking about the other Christopher Robin movie with Ewan McGregor and how beautiful that is. I'll make sure I hunt that down and watch that as well. But this one is Goodbye, Christopher Robin. Definitely worth seeing.
It's so strange that they put all these movies about the same thing out at this, about the same topic or out at the same time.
They do, don't they? They always do.
Like last year there was like 3 or 4 Winston Churchill movies, and it's just a weird run of things. And they make these movies sort of 2 and 3 years in advance, so it's not like they're deliberately doing it. Anyway.
Yes, but yes, I heard a similar thing, people talking about tennis movies, and all of a sudden we have 3 tennis star movies or 3 racing car driving movies or whatever. I totally agree with you. It's like just one person gets a whiff of an idea and then it just escalates in Hollywood. Nikki, tell me about Facebook TV.
Well, Facebook TV is a thing, Kirsty. Do you watch Facebook TV?
I don't think I do.
No, I don't. I didn't either. And then for some reason I follow Sheryl Sandberg on Facebook because I went to a big blogging conference in Chicago when I lived in the States, and she was the keynote speaker, and so I've sort of followed her quite closely since then on social media. And she was speaking about a show on Facebook TV called Sorry for Your Loss. And Sorry for Your Loss shows Elizabeth Olsen as a young widow and dealing with her life after the loss of her husband. And Sheryl Sandberg was doing a Facebook Live about it. And I thought, why is she talking about a TV show? And then I sort of looked into it a little bit more and I saw that Facebook actually has TV shows that Facebook produces, like Netflix produces TV shows, like Amazon Prime produces TV shows. Facebook produces TV shows.
Is that when you see on your Facebook feed something down the bottom that says Facebook Watch?
That's exactly what it is, Facebook Watch. And so I looked into it a little bit more, and there was an article I found in the Wall Street Journal in September 2017, so a year ago, that said the company was willing to spend up to $1 billion on original video content in the last 12 months. So then I thought, and then I went, okay, I'm going to watch an episode. And I watched an episode of this show. It's a great show. I'm really enjoying it. And then I thought, what else would I like? What else might I find on Facebook Watch / TV / original content? And so there, I found another one that I've just started having a look at a few ones. So The Humans of New York.
Yeah.
The guy that does, you know, the guy that does the photos, yeah, and then he tells a little story about the photos. Well, he did a video series and made for Facebook. And, you know, he called one commitment, one independence. So it's sort of these, he talks to people around certain themes.
Yeah.
And he spent, I think, 4 years filming people for this TV series. So I've just started to have a little look at that as well. So I just thought, you know what? You don't need a VPN. You don't need an app. It doesn't matter what country you're in.
Wow.
If you've got Facebook, you can watch Facebook TV.
Wow. Oh, that sounds good. That sounds good.
So I recommend having a look at Sorry for Your Loss. And if anyone else has watched another Facebook watch or Facebook TV show and they think I should watch it, because I'm a big watcher of TV things, let me know and I'm happy to give it a whirl.
Just talking about telly, Nikki, you tagged me in on a conversation that people were having about Survivor, and you are so lucky that I saw that it was Survivor and quickly shut it down because I hadn't watched the episode yet. You nearly...
But it did.
It did. It did.
Did it?
Yes, because they were all talking about the people that were left in it. And one of the big things was, you know, of last night's episode was waiting to see, you know, who was going to go home. So if I had seen that they were talking about the people they were talking about, I would have known, oh, he's not going.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just saw the headline.
You didn't spoil it.
I just saw the headline that said, "How good is Survivor Australia? I'm loving it. I've never loved it more." And then so I was like, "Oh, Kirsty Rice is always banging on about Survivor Australia this season. How she loves it. I'm just going to tag her in this post." I didn't read anything else because I haven't been following it, so it didn't mean anything to me. So my apologies.
It is.
I'm glad you got out of that.
So good. It is so, so good. And once again, last night, jumping off the chair, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, this is so good. It is a brilliant, brilliant series. There's one other thing I want to talk to you about, Telly. I wanted to ask, have you been watching, it just started on the ABC last week, as in ABC Australia, you can get it on iView, Exposed, the case of Kelly Lane?
I haven't, but it's definitely on my list because you can't get away from it if you have Australian friends on social media.
We'll
talk about
good.
That next week.
Maybe. Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about it next week. Okay, so moving right along, we're on to podcasts. Nikki, have you listened to Feidler lately, and in particular, have you listened to the interview where he's talking to Lee Sales about her new book, An Ordinary Day?
Yes, I have. And I listened to it because I saw a post on Mamma Mia Out Louders that said, have you listened to Mia interview Lee Sales about her book? And someone said, I heard it on Richard Feidler. And the person said, I enjoyed the Mia Friedman interview more.
Ooh.
So I listened to the Mia Friedman interview. I listened to the Richard Feidler interview. And I listened to the Annabelle Crabb interview.
Oh.
All with Lee Sales, all yesterday when I was driving to and from the baby shower.
Oh, wow. Which one did you think was the best interview out of the three?
Well, do you know, I actually did enjoy the Mia Friedman interview the best.
Wow.
Which, yep, surprised, yes, I could tell it surprises you too. Look, I think Richard Feidler is a great interviewer, and the people he interviews are so just it's gripping and engrossing whenever you listen to it. You never want to stop it. But I think I didn't understand this earlier, but I think Mia and Lee are friends.
Yes, they are.
IRL in real life.
Yep.
And it just, so Mia did prepare for it as she would for a normal no filter interview, but it just had that, and I'm sure actually Lee is also friends with Richard Fiber, yes. That came across as well, and also with Annabelle Crapp. But it just had, it just was one of those things. It was a good fit for what Mia does on No Filter, I think.
Yes.
And I enjoyed that interview. Of the three, I enjoyed that the most, but, you know, I enjoyed them all. And there are a lot of, Lee told a lot of the same story, so I was thinking, oh, did I hear this already? But I just thought that Mia got a little bit more out of her. And she actually recorded the interview with Lee after the book had been published, but before Lee's father had passed away, which happened between those two events. So she then did a follow-up call with Lee, so not in studio, but a phone call because the book Any Ordinary Day talks about the fact that you can wake up in the morning and have your cereal and you don't know that your whole life's about to be changed over the course of the day.
Yes.
And she did interviews with a lot of prominent Australians about that after having an personal experience. And so she did a follow-up interview with her over the phone, and that I think that really sort of clinched it for me, talking about having written the book and reflecting on it. Did that help her deal with the death of her father? And as you hear in the Richard Feidler interview, it changed a lot about what she did in that process.
Yeah. So the book An Ordinary Day is it looks at people whose lives were dramatically changed in one day where they had great tragedy, I guess. And one of the stories she talks about in the Feidler interview is it Hannah Rochelle, her name is?
Yes.
Whose husband was killed in a surfing accident. And I actually remember from a blogging perspective that happening because I knew people who knew her. And so it was one of those, you know, when you pick up those bits and pieces on social media where people were talking about someone else's tragedy, like, oh, my God, you know, like someone will vague post, you know, oh, my God, terrible day, unimaginable tragedy. Oh, you know, really feeling for my dear friend, you know, and you're thinking, who, what, how, you know, and you start following these things and you realize that something really, really terrible has happened. And, you know, her situation was, of course, that she had young children and her husband went off for a surf in the morning and never came home. And then I think some of the other stories, because I haven't read the book, I've only listened to the interviews, and the interviews were amazing because they talked about Lee's personal situation where she was 37 weeks pregnant and she had a uterine, what do they call it when your uterus basically ruptures? Yes. Which, do you know, Nikki, I don't think there's a pregnant person that hasn't thought about what that looks like, because you know that you're told that it's fatal and that you'll lose both mother and child. So just listening to her explanation of that, but the bit for me that really got me was when she talked about being in hospital and being in so much strife health-wise, but kind of telling people, no, you don't need to come. And because she is a bit of a control freak and organizational freak, and I could see pieces of myself in her in that way of her saying, no, you don't need to come, I've got it covered, I'm fine, I don't need any help. But just how she has gone full circle in asking for help now and accepting help from people. And I thought she interviewed incredibly well. I thought when Feidler made the connection, she talked about a moment where she woke up in the hospital crying, saying, mummy, mummy, mummy. And Feidler made the connection between soldiers at war doing that.
Yeah,
that was a real moment for me in the interview where I thought it really got me, and you could tell that that's where it really got. It was very raw for her.
Yeah, the interviews are a little bit mixed up in my mind now, but certainly each interview had something that was a little bit special like that, yes. that was a little bit different along with the same theory. So I'm very happy to recommend all those three podcasts for people yes. to listen to.
And I'm going to go back and re-listen to Mia's No Filter, because kudos to her that people said, because, you know, it's a big call if you're interviewing someone that everybody else is interviewing, to find something unique and to come out where people have said, you know, that they enjoyed yours the most. I think that's great. And on Fidler, I did notice when I went back to Fidler to listen to Lee that there are so many interviews there that I want to listen to.
Yes, me too.
Oil for choice now. I saw that there is a Tim Minchin interview there that I definitely am going to go and chase down.
And there's a new Tony Atwood one this week as well that I think, oh, gosh, I have to listen to that.
Okay. That's us.
Us for the week, Kirsty. Once again, lots of chat. Chat packed. I'll speak to you later.
Okay. Talk to you next week.